is a weapon of war. The importance of human rights propelled us to, of course, use this moment to raise our voice and still call for a ceasefire and, of course, call for end complicity. But the negotiations themselves, it's often been called the finance COP, and the reason why it's called the finance COP is this COP is meant to agree what the next quantum, which is the collective goal of money that is meant to be provided from the global north to the global south because of the responsibility of the global north for causing this crisis, and what that figure will be, what the quality of that money will be. Will it be in public finance, or will it be in debt creating loans? Will it be in private finance? All of these things are being fought out over here in week one and in week two.
So I want to ask why you're here and why so many thousands of people have come to this climate summit. Prominent climate activist Greta Thunberg announced last week she's not attending this COP summit over Azerbaijan's climate and human rights record. She spoke Friday in Yerevan, Armenia.
I think we have to stop pretending that conferences like the COP that currently are not leading to any even close to meaningful climate action that we need. For example, last year we saw an all-time high of greenhouse gas emissions, and 2024 is said to be the hottest year ever recorded. These COP processes are failing us. Having these conferences as greenwash platforms for politicians to pretend that they are taking action, of course, it's also greenwashing the human rights abuses that these countries are committing. So it's both greenwashing and greenwashing the climate action and greenwashing their ethnic cleansing.
So that's Greta Thunberg, the well-known Swedish climate and human rights activist. Asad Rehman, you made a different decision.
Yes, because I see these spaces as fundamentally being about a question about power. We know that the rich and powerful have got way more power than ordinary people, and this is a contested space. And we have to build our power, make sure our politicians act in our interests, in the interests of the planet, and not of the rich and the elite and big business. And that's true at national level, is it in a global level. But it is important that we're here because we're the ears, eyes and voice of those on the front lines. Many people come here with the hard evidence to try and influence these negotiations, and knowing the imbalance of power that exists between the richest nations and developing countries, if we as civil society weren't here also holding the feet of global north governments to the fire, we would see much worse outcomes than we're seeing already.
So I wanted to play another clip. This is of Azerbaijan's Minister of Ecology and Natural Resources, Mukhtar Babayev, is COP29's president, previously spent 26 years at the state oil company of the Azerbaijan Republic, known as SOCAR. Ahead of the summit, the group Global Witness released covert recordings of Azerbaijan's COP29 chief executive, Elnur Sultanov, promoting possible fossil fuel deals with someone, well, posing as an investor. The fake investor told Sultanov they were considering sponsoring COP29 in exchange for deals with Azerbaijan state energy firm SOCAR. This is Sultanov.
As I said, we have a lot of pipeline infrastructure. We have a lot of gas fields that are to be developed. We have a lot of green projects that SOCAR is very interested in. There are a lot of joint ventures that could be established, potential joint ventures. Our SOCAR trading is trading oil and gas all over the world, including in Asia. So to me, these are the possibilities to explore.
So while it's so critical, again, that was Sultanov thinking he was talking to a fossil fuel exec. In fact, it was someone from Global Witness. But you have at this COP, you could consider them a delegation, the largest delegation here, and that's of fossil fuel lobbyists. And you have this chief executive making fuel and oil deals while he's here. So why do you think you can have an effect as you talk about the imbalance of power, Asad?
Well, those very same lobbyists are, of course, affecting our decisions of governments at national level as they are at global level. They're, of course, want to turn this climate negotiations into a trade fair. They're coming here to try to strike deals, make bargains, and, of course, propose their solutions. You see this lobbyist here calling for carbon capture and storage, unproven, deadly and dangerous technologies as solutions to the climate crisis. It's up to us to be imposing them, to put forward real solutions, to be supporting governments who do want to do the right thing and say, we're going to amplify your voice, we're going to support you, we're going to raise these issues, and we're going to build our movements, power, and make sure we're making the right call.
So the theme is financing. I was just talking to a Kenyan journalist who said Africa is faring very badly here. You're not wearing the regular COP lanyard. You're wearing one that says pay up.
Global civil society came together and we looked at what the true costs of supporting developing countries to be able to grow cleanly, what the cost of adapting to the climate crisis was, how much the damages were already overwhelming countries in the global south. And we calculated that is about $5 trillion a year that the global north would need to provide to the global south. That's just a down payment in the overall cost. And so we came here and said, look, the only way we're going to be able to transition fairly, cleanly, the only way that people in the global south will have the same right to live with dignified lives as people in the global north, if we have finance and technology being provided. We made the call for $5 trillion. Developing countries came here and said, at a base level, the lowest number, we must have $1.4 trillion a year. Rich developed countries are putting pennies on the table. They're not even talking about billions. They're talking the private sector will provide this finance. Open your economies to our big corporations. They will be the answer. And we know they deliver nothing in terms of climate action. And, of course, their only goal is to make profit.
Asad Rehman, I want to thank you for being with us. Executive Director of War on Want, lead spokesperson for the Climate Justice Coalition. As climate talks are underway here in Baku, human rights groups have warned of Azerbaijan's escalating crackdown on civil society groups, government critics, and the press. Since Azerbaijan was announced as the host of COP29 last year, more than a dozen activists and journalists have been arrested or arbitrarily detained, including prominent human rights and climate advocate Anar Mamadli, who is leader of Azerbaijan's largest independent election watchdog, an Azerbaijani anti-corruption advocate, Gubad Avadoglu, who is also a vocal critic of the oil and gas industry. For more, we're going nearby to Tbilisi, Georgia, where we're joined by Georgi Gogia, Associate Director of the Europe and Central Asia Division at Human Rights Watch, co-author of the recent report titled, We Try to Stay Invisible, Azerbaijan's Escalating Crackdown on Critics and Civil Society. Georgi, welcome to Democracy Now! If you can start off by talking about the main findings of your report.
Thank you. Thanks for having me, Amy. I just want to start with a very sad observation. I was listening to your program and watching how you interviewed activists globally talking about the climate crisis. And I could not help but think about the deafening silence of Azerbaijani climate activists, human rights defenders, and think about what this COP would have been like if people on whose cases we documented in the report and on whose behalf I will be talking to you about, how different it would have been if they were there to voice their criticism, for their voices to be heard by the globe. Let me talk a little bit about the kind of findings. And Azerbaijan has had an abysmal rights record for many years, but it has dramatically deteriorated in the run-up to COP29. Human Rights Watch and Freedom Now have documented 33 cases of arrests, new arrests and imprisonments of journalists, activists, human rights defenders, and just government critics on various bogus charges. We have also found that government has used very repressive laws to allow refuse the registration of independent groups and to push them to the margins of the law, allowing retaliatory prosecutions, which we have documented in this report.
So give us the example of people who have been arrested.
You have mentioned the name of Anar Mammadli, and he's the head of one of the top human rights groups. He's a veteran human rights defender, election monitoring watchdog, who has been arrested in April this year, shortly weeks after he announced the establishment of creation of climate of justice initiative intended to highlight the human rights problems of Azerbaijan in the run-up to COP29. And shortly after he published his independent observation report about the presidential elections from February this year. This is not the first time Arnar was arrested. He was arrested and served 2.5 years in 2013-14 when Azerbaijan was in the height of the crackdown against independent voices in the country. And the European Court of Human Rights has found not only the violation of the European Court in his arrest, but also that this violation, Azerbaijan pursued the ulterior motives in arresting him, intending to silence him. Unfortunately, once again, the Azerbaijani government is attempting to silence him after he was refused to... His registration of his one NGO was abolished and he was refused to register the second group that was working to monitor the elections in the country. He's facing multiple years, up to 8 or 12 years in prison on bogus charges of money smuggling. Another activist, professor, renowned scholar, anti-corruption activist, who worked in the oil and gas field, criticized the lack of transparency of revenue in the oil and gas field in Azerbaijan, is Gubadi Badoglu, a renowned scholar who was arrested last year and served 9 months in pretrial detention. It is currently under limited house arrest, but still facing up to 17 years in jail if convicted on counterfeit and extremism charges. These are the voices you should be hearing during COP29 Baku, but you are not. I would also highlight the cases of independent journalists from several independent media, online media outlets, Abzas Media, Toplum TV, Human Rights Watch has documented 12 cases of journalists and 6 other media affiliated people with this media being arrested also in the last few months and facing money smuggling charges, tax evasion, and other bogus charges. These are, Ulvi, Hasanli, Sevinç, Vagif Gizi, Hafiz Babali, and others. And these are the people whose voices are again being silenced. These are the people who should be holding Azerbaijan, the powers, accountable to the people.
So, if you can talk about how, if these issues are being raised here at the COP, I mean, you have top leaders of, for example, the West, European countries, Western countries. Are they pressuring Azerbaijan to release the journalists, the climate, the human rights activists who've been arrested in these last months in the lead up to this very summit?
Well, I certainly hope so, because this has been a call from local and international human rights groups, including some governments, that they should be engaging Baku, they should be engaging Azerbaijani authorities to ensure that everyone that is on politically motivated charges in prison in Azerbaijan are released and there's an end to the crackdown, that his only intention is to silence the critical voices in the country. They should also ensure they should should also be calling on Azerbaijani government to end the to amend the repressive laws that allow arbitrary implementation of those laws and allow the denial of the independent groups to register and be able to conduct independent legitimate human rights work in the country. You know, you discussed how this is the great climate crisis, and this kind of climate crisis requires robust human rights actions by all governments, and but also this response to this climate crisis requires the participation by all groups, independent groups in them. Unfortunately, the groups that we are not hearing during this call are Azerbaijani independent civil society that are languishing in jail, are in the house arrest, or are in exile because they're not able to be present in Baku, to be present and during negotiations, to be actively kind of promoting robust climate action. And this is not just kind of arrests, but but there has been just last year there has been other examples when climate activists, not even climate activists, like local residents of small village, for example, in Western Azerbaijan, in Soyodlu, have tried to organize, criticize the government for construction of the gold mine and the dam. And the government response has been such a heavy-handed by not only arresting and prosecuting the local population, but also cordoning, blocking the entire village for months, not allowing any journalists, confiscating their equipment, and not allowing any information to get in or get out. So this is the country that that puts independent voices on the path of extinction. And it's really important that for Azerbaijan to end this crackdown, or for Azerbaijan's international partners to ensure, to insist, to urge Baku to release those unjustly imprisoned and end the crackdown in the country against critical voices.
Finally, and we just have 30 seconds for a response to this, the significance of oil and gas accounting for something like 92% of Azerbaijan's exports. Its main importer of that gas, 80% of it goes, the biggest importer is the European Union. Do you think that would stop them from criticizing the president and Azerbaijan overall?
Well, that certainly should not stop them from doing it. And you should be insisting that as part of the partnership, as part of the negotiations, part of the cooperation between Azerbaijan and the European Union, Azerbaijan should adhere to human rights, to principles of human rights. And I hope European Union is insisting on in direct calls or behind the closed doors, is insisting on the release of independent journalists, activists, human rights defenders, and the end to this crackdown. This is the only proper, the right response that the EU should be engaging in.
And Gyorgy, finally, how common is it for you to do something like this today? Speak with a journalist on television inside Azerbaijan. Of course, you're outside.
Well, the reason I'm outside is because I have been detained and kicked out of the country in 2015, actually, when I was there to monitor the trial of human rights defender. I was not allowed to get in. Furthermore, Human Rights Watch, deputy director of the European Central Asia Division, that had the registration for the COP 29, was rejected the visa just a few days ago and is not able to be on the ground to highlight it. So the reason I am speaking from afar is because Azerbaijan is preventing many of us who criticize Azerbaijan from entering the country. It is closing for international scrutiny its borders. Nevertheless, we continue to do the work and highlight the cases of those who are in prison on nothing more but doing their legitimate human rights work.
Georgi Gogia, we want to thank you so much for being with us, Associate Director of the Europe and Central Asia Division at Human Rights Watch, co-author of the report, which we will link to, We Try to Stay Invisible, Azerbaijan's Escalating Crackdown on Critics and Civil Society, speaking to us from Tbilisi, Georgia. When we come back, President-elect Trump has promised to pull out of the Paris Climate Agreement again. And while filling out his cabinet, he's chosen oil and gas industry executive Chris Wright as his nominee for energy secretary, a fracking magnate, a climate denier, a champion of fossil fuels. We'll be back in 20 seconds.
But there is new life in the rain, the rain.
Without Us by the Reverend Billy and the Stop Shopping Choir. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, the War and Peace Report. As we continue our coverage from COP29 here in Baku, Azerbaijan, I'm Amy Goodman. We look at what Donald Trump's reelection as U.S. president means for the climate. Clean energy and environmental advocates are raising alarm over Trump's nomination of oil and gas industry executive Chris Wright to serve as energy secretary. Wright's a fracking magnate who's long championed fossil fuel production and publicly denied the existence of the climate crisis. He's the CEO of the Denver-based oil field firm Liberty Energy, serves on the board of Oklo, a nuclear power startup. Wright posted this video on his LinkedIn profile just last year.
There is no climate crisis, and we're not in the midst of an energy transition either. Humans and all complex life on Earth is simply impossible without carbon dioxide. Hence, the term carbon pollution is outrageous. There is no such thing as clean energy or dirty energy. These five terms, climate crisis, energy transition, carbon pollution, clean energy, and dirty energy, are not only deceptive, they are, in fact, destructive deceptions.
Wright is also known for drinking a fracking fluid bleach cocktail on camera to prove it was safe. In a statement, Trump said Wright would be ushering in a so-called golden age of American prosperity and global peace, unquote. Trump's also announced North Dakota Governor Doug Burgum as his pick to lead the Interior Department, a position currently held by Deb Haaland, who made history as the first Native American to ever serve as cabinet secretary. Trump wrote in a statement, quote, "We will drill, baby, drill, expand all forms of energy production to grow our economy and create good-paying jobs," unquote. Burgum was also tapped to head a newly created National Energy Council, which will seek to, quote, enforce U.S. energy dominance, unquote, globally. For more, we're joined here in Baku by Manish Bapna, president of the NRDC, that's the Natural Resources Defense Council, and Natural Resources Defense Council Action. So we just have a few minutes at the end of this show. First, respond to Chris Wright's nomination, the climate denier, the fracking magnate, the man who drank bleach and fracking fluid on TV.
It is deeply troubling. It is startling, but shouldn't be a surprise in light of the fact of who nominated him. It's particularly jarring as we sit here in Baku at the climate COP. We're already flirting with 1.5 degrees. We have already kind of behind the game in reducing emissions. And now we have not only Chris Wright, but we have Doug Burgum as the head of Interior, potentially, and Lee Zeldin as the head of the Environmental Protection Agency. These are serious positions. They're senior cabinet positions in the next administration for the United States. Charged with protecting clean air, clean water, creating jobs for the future. And all of these nominations are just deeply troubling. They represent significant regression at a time when we need to see much, much greater progress.
So what are you doing about it? We said nominate. We didn't say they are appointed.
Exactly.
Although that's what President-elect Trump would like to see, is recess appointments. So how are you organizing?
We are trying to shine a light on who they are and what they represent and how out of touch they are with what the public actually wants. When we see polling around the importance of clean air, clean water, protecting public health, creating jobs, lowering energy costs, the thing is that clean energy has been demonstrated to be more affordable, more reliable. It's more energy secure than a lot of the other options that people are promoting. We even see with the unprecedented progress that's happened in the last few years with the Inflation Reduction Act, an incredible set of investments taking place all around the country. The Inflation Reduction Act has generated 85% of investments in red districts, in Republican districts. 68% of the jobs created are in Republican districts. We are demonstrating that clean energy is good for the entire country, and they're going to take us backwards. And so we're going to do what we can to shine a light on their record and try to see if we could find the right people to lead these agencies. But if that is not possible, we will do what we can to hold them accountable.
So having Energy Secretary Chris Wright, not only does President-elect Trump at this point want recess appointments, he doesn't want them backgrounded by the FBI. When you don't have a hearing, you don't learn about people's financial investments, conflicts of interest. Trump himself has refused to sign ethics forms since October. What would that mean, a man who would stand to gain an enormous amount as head of energy company, Liberty Energy?
All you have to do is follow the money. Right. All three of these candidates, you look at someone like Chris Wright, we heard what he said, and we know where he would actually benefit. He is the CEO of a fracking company. We have Doug Burgum, who played an important role in brokering a deal between President-elect Trump and oil and gas billionaires in Florida a couple months ago when President-elect Trump said that for $1 billion, he will provide favors to the oil and gas industry. We have to follow the money. And that is one of the biggest challenges we see in politics in the United States today, which has been exacerbated since Citizens United back in 2010. More money into politics, more corporate money into politics, has just created the challenges we're seeing today.
Talk more about North Dakota, Governor Burgum. Of course, North Dakota, the site of an epic battle in the last years around the Dakota Access Pipeline with Energy Transfer Partners. But what it means to have him as head of the Interior, and not only head of the Interior, Donald Trump has said he will also serve as energy czar.
This is a huge job, right? The Department of the Interior is responsible for our public lands, about conservation, about how we use those public lands wisely for today and for tomorrow. And so he'll be in a position to expand oil and gas leasing in offshore water, on land, at a time when just last year's COP, as you mentioned earlier, the international community recognized we needed to transition away from fossil fuels. The United States is already the largest oil and gas producer in the world, increasing rapidly. And now we have someone who has promised to further accelerate oil and gas exploration in the United States. Perhaps most notably, we'll be lifting the pause on LNG exports that the Biden administration put in place just 6 months ago. And with someone like him responsible for energy across the entire administration, it creates real serious concerns about how we make sure that the United States stays focused on the clean energy transition. The one thing I would say, though,
we have 10 seconds,
is that the clean energy transition in the United States is unstoppable. It's going to hit some speed bumps now, but it will move forward.
Manish Bapna, president of the Natural Resources Defense Council and Natural Resources Defense Council Action. That does it for our show. Our deepest condolences to Karen Ranucci on the passing of her father, and a happy 80th birthday to Danny DeVito. I'm Amy Goodman here in Baku, Azerbaijan.
Hi, this is Jesse Brown, the host of Canada Land, Canada's only media criticism program. Every week I talk to some of the most interesting people in the country about some of the things that matter most. We talk about the news media, about comedy, film, music, and politics. And you can now listen on CJSF 90.1 FM every Monday at 5 p.m. Wait for it.